This second session, I've asked a couple of our assistant pastors' wives to speak, and one of those is Miss Justine Chidi. She's going to speak first. Her and her husband are the newest members to our staff, and they have taken over the teen department, and they do a great job with it. Justine is a sweet, dear lady. She's very proficient on the piano. I'll say that because she won't say that about herself. She's a very humble, sweet lady. And so I'm excited to hear her speak. And then right after that, most of you all know Miss Susan Heaton. Her and her husband now are Mrs. Susan Heaton. I say Miss. Her and her husband now have taken over the singles and career age young people, and they're doing a great job taking those young people, they used to do the teen department, and now bringing them to the next level in our church. And so they're both a great blessing to me. And I'll say this on Susan. I don't know if she even remembers this. Where are you, Susan? Yes, yes. But I don't know if you remember this, but when you were a teen in high school, I remember she came to me and she had a school assignment. And she had, I guess the assignment was that they had to interview somebody who was doing a profession or job that they would like to have one day. And it just pleased me that she came and interviewed me, because evidently I didn't make the job of a pastor's wife look too horrible that she would say, I never want to do that. And so it pleased me that that was an aspiration of hers, even then, that she'd like to someday be a pastor's wife. So I remembered that, and it was always a blessing to me, Susan. So anyway, with no further ado, we're going to have Miss Justine speak to us and tell her testimony. That's what I've asked him to do.
So I'm supposed to give my testimony from a perspective of being raised in a pastor's home. And my parents met when they were in Bible college. My dad is from Kentucky. And he always he wanted to be a pastor. He was a youth pastor while he was there in Kentucky for a couple years or so. I was born at that time in Kentucky. But he had a desire to move somewhere else and either become the head pastor or an assistant pastor somewhere else. He really wanted to become a pastor. Anyway, he got a call from Jack Treiber at North Valley Baptist Church in Santa Clara, California. And Brother Treiber called and asked him to move there and be his assistant. And my dad was like, he didn't say this, but he thought to himself, no way. I am not going to move to California. You know, I'm from Kentucky in the South. The last place I ever want to go is California. So he didn't want to go there, but the Lord worked on his heart, and eventually he did go. And so we moved to California when I was one, and he was there as an assistant for about 20 years. So that's where I grew up. I grew up in California. I consider myself a California girl, and I've been in Ohio for about 3 years here, and it's quite different from California. So I'm still trying to adjust to having rain in the summertime, which is just so weird to me. We don't have rain in the summer in California, so here it's just weird. I don't dislike it, it's just weird. anyway, so there's stuff like that I'm still trying to get used to. But growing up in California, so my dad was an assistant pastor there, and I got saved when I was 5 years old, and my mom led me to the Lord. And ever since I was a kid, as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to serve in the ministry or work in the ministry to some capacity. And I feel like I owe that to my parents, because I never remember hearing them saying a negative word or anything bad about our church or the pastor or other staff members or other church members. And I don't know what they said to themselves, to each other in private, but in front of their kids, they never talked about that or said anything negative. And I think because of that, I was able to have a desire to work in the ministry, because I only saw the good side of that. And so from a child, that's what I wanted to do. And so as far as, I did get saved when I was five, and I think this is common for most kids that get saved at a young age. They kind of doubt it as they get older. And for me, I just didn't remember everything I had said or exactly how it went, because I was only 5 years old at the time. But it doesn't necessarily mean I wasn't saved. I was just having doubts as I got older, and I struggled with that. And finally, when I was 12 years old, I just got it settled in my heart that I knew I was saved. I did pray again and accept the Lord as my Savior, but I still think I got saved when I was 5. But anyway, at least I had all the doubts removed. But I didn't tell anybody. I was so afraid and embarrassed to tell anybody because I was a pastor's kid and because of who I was supposed to be. At least I felt I was supposed to be in everyone else's eyes. I was afraid to let everyone know that I had been lying this whole time. I didn't know I was saved. And so I was embarrassed to tell anyone. So I waited 2 years before I finally told someone about it. And it was nice just to have that out in the open. And so I had it all settled and that was all taken care of. And it was around that time when I also surrendered at a youth conference. I surrendered my life to a full-time Christian service, whether it was being a school teacher at a Christian school, being a youth pastor's wife, or simply just marrying a pastor or someone working in full-time ministry. That was my desire for my life. So I knew I wanted to go to Bible college at some point. And luckily for me, our church started a Bible college, Golden State Baptist College. So that made it super easy for me. I was like, all right, that's where I'm going. That's an easy choice there. So I attended a Bible college at Golden State Baptist College. And my dad was also able to be the president of the college for a few years before they finally moved back to Kentucky, where my dad now pastors the church that he grew up in. So they've been there for about 11 years. So before I went to Bible college, I was working that summer before I became a freshman. I was working in the college offices, and I was able to get that job because my dad was the president. So that's just the way it works, I guess. So anyway, I was working with a girl named Elizabeth Cheedy, who her family's from here. And she had a younger brother, Caleb, who was going to also be a freshman just like me that same year. And so she had told me about him coming. I'm like, oh, cool, that's neat. I'll get to meet him. And then something happened to him before he came. He got in a horrible car accident. He fell asleep at the wheel. And so he had to be flown by helicopter to the hospital. And it sounded terrible. But he ended up being fine. And all he had was this big cut on his forehead. And if you've seen him, he still has the scar. And anyway, he had all these stitches put in his head. And I hadn't seen what he looked like up until this point, but his sister Elizabeth had a picture on her computer. She said, you want to see a picture of my brother? You know, he has all these stitches in his head. I'm like, sure. So I saw a picture of him for the first time in a hospital bed with a hospital gown with a cut and all these stitches. And I'm like, oh, he's actually really cute. And so that's my first time seeing him in a picture. And then anyway, so we both went to Bible college together. We met our first year. And then he had this dumb rule for himself that he was not going to date anyone his first year of Bible college. So I'm like, okay, well, then I guess I'll just meet some other guys, I guess, if we're not going to be able to date or anything. And we weren't talking a whole lot at that point, but I was very interested in him. I thought he was cute, and I think he was interested in me, but I don't know. He wasn't dating anyone, so how could I really know? So anyway, after our freshman year, both of us were able to tour in college singing groups in separate groups. And it was during that summer we kind of kept in touch, text messaging and phone calls every once in a while. And then the start of our sophomore year, we started dating. And then we graduated in 2009. And I graduated with a degree in music education. Also, I did take piano lessons all my life. My mom was a piano player. And so she taught me from a young child how to play piano. And then up until sixth grade, she's like, okay, I can't teach you anymore. I don't know what else to teach you. So I had other teachers, and I continued that through Bible college, and that's kind of what I majored in. And my husband also he majored in pastoral assistant with music as one of the things that he was studying. So I liked the fact that he was musical. I really liked that about him. He had an awesome voice and everything. So anyway, we got married a month after we graduated from Bible college, and then immediately after our honeymoon, we moved to Iowa to work as an assistant pastor there. My husband was the youth pastor there, and we were in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, so we were there for about a year and a half, and then he felt the Lord calling us to go back to California, but not to where I grew up, to Chico, California. We knew the pastor of that church, Pastor Tim Rule, was a college teacher at the college we went to, so that was our connection there. So we moved from Iowa all the way back to California, which I didn't mind that because I love California. I'm a California girl. So so that was great, but we were far away from my family. My family at that point was in Kentucky. His family was here, so we didn't get to see our family very much. But we were there for about 5 years. So my husband was the song leader, choir director, and I played the piano for everything. And while we were there in California, we had our three children, Billy, Avery, and Ellie. They are 7, 5, and 3. And our second one, Avery, she was born extra early at 24 weeks. So that was an interesting time of life. And it's interesting to hear about the statistics of a child born at 24 weeks. It's usually like a 50-50 chance that they're actually going to survive past that. And so, but the Lord was so good to us during that time, and she did survive, and she did great. And even of the ones that do survive, a lot of them suffer brain damage, and they have a lot of physical problems because of being born so early. But thankfully, she didn't have any of that. The only thing she had was she had to have laser eye surgery done because her eyes were going the wrong way. And so to fix that, it kind of messed up her vision, and so she has to wear glasses. So you might see her running around with glasses. She is 5 years old now, and she's about to go into kindergarten. But the Lord was so good to us through that time, and it was a hard time because she had to be taken to a hospital that was an hour and a half from our home, and I had to be with her the whole time. She had to be in the hospital for 4 months because she was 4 months early. So I had to be away from home with my son, who was one at the time. So that was just a very interesting time of life. My husband stayed in Chico so we could work, so we were kind of separated a lot. We tried to go back and forth seeing each other. But it was very hard, very difficult, but the Lord brought us through that, and in the end, we came home with a pretty healthy baby girl, considering what could have happened to her. So we were very grateful for that. And then so since then, so we were there for about 5 years, and the Lord started moving on my husband's heart that he needed to be somewhere else. But we just didn't know where. So we're like, okay, what are we going to do? And so we decided, until we knew for sure where the next place was, that we would just move back here, because this is where Caleb's family was, and they still are here. And so we decided to just come back here and just wait on the Lord and wait for him to show us where to go next. And so after being here for about a year, they asked him to be hired on staff here as the youth pastor. And so we were like, yes, we want to do that. We love it here. We love the church. We fell in love with it and the people. And so we were so excited to be able to be a part of this church. And so we love being able to work with the teens, and we just think it's a great church to be in. And right now we're working with the kids in the VBS. So that's where I'm going right after this. We're having fun with that. But I love being here. It's an awesome church. And
I think some of you probably have heard my testimony in the past, but there's probably plenty here that I think maybe haven't. So, but it's something I do love to talk about my testimony, because it's what the Lord's done in my life and my family's life. And so I'm just excited to just tell what the Lord's done. So my perspective, Justine's was becoming, her testimony is being grown up in someone who's in the ministry. Her father was in the ministry and things like that. Mine was a little bit different than that. I did grow up in a Christian home. My parents weren't in the ministry or anything. My dad's not a deacon or anything. But I guess it kind of goes back to my grandparents. My grandparents were Lutheran and brought my dad up Lutheran. He's an only child. They were good people. And I do believe there are many Lutherans that are saved. My grandparents didn't get saved until later. But I believe they were in a church that just kept them ignorant. I guess I would have to describe it that way. But like I said, they did get saved later on, and my dad actually got saved at a Billy Graham crusade in Pittsburgh. He went to visit a girl when he was single or whatever, and she wanted him to go to this Billy Graham crusade, and he's like, sure, whatever. So he got saved there. So praise the Lord for that. And my mom grew up Catholic, and my grandma's still Catholic. Her father died when I was 6 years old, and we don't believe that he was saved, not to our knowledge that we know of. My grandma is still alive. She's 93. She turned 93 in May, still lives on her own, but she's still Catholic. And from what we understand, we haven't been able to get a profession of faith out of her. So we still pray for her, but she's not doing really well health-wise, so we're just praying the Lord allows us still some more time to be able to witness to her even more. But my parents had good upbringings. They had very good parents who, in the world standards, were very good, good parents. So I'm very thankful for that they brought them up in the way that was good, to be good people and good, you know, good to your community and things like that. But obviously we knew that wasn't going to, that's not going to get you to heaven. But so anyway, through all of that, the Lord brought my parents together in a very short amount of time. My dad worked at a grocery store, and my mom walked in, and she was saved as a teenager at a youth camp. But then when she came back, didn't have any idea of Christian growth or anything like that. So we kind of laugh. My mom has always been thinner, and she walked into the grocery store that my dad worked at wearing a nice little short dress, and my dad said he noticed her, and 4 months later they got married. And it's been 40, I forget how many years now, but so they've been married for a long time, and I'm thankful for that. And they've always had a good marriage, and I'm thankful that the Lord's allowed me to see that. But I guess I look back at how my parents brought us up, and they were both trying to bring us, my siblings, my older sister and my younger brother and I, in different ways than they did. They were brought up themselves. They sent us to a private Christian school, which I'm very, very thankful for. But it's not something that they grew up, you know, in that manner. So we're just, my sister and brother and I are just thankful that they tried as much as they could to grow in the Lord, and just to do what they felt like the Lord was trying to instill in us. So at seven, it was somewhere between 5 and 7. I don't know exactly what age. I can tell you where I was and which house we were in. That's why I know it's between 5 and 7, that I felt the need of salvation. So I remember going to my dad. We prayed in their bedroom. So that's when I got saved. But my parents started coming to this church after my dad worked at the grocery store, and Pastor Sal, when he first came almost 40 years ago, also, he was bivocational, obviously, at the time. So he worked with my dad, and my dad's like, well, I'm a Christian, but I don't know of any good Baptist churches. Well, he wasn't Baptist, you know, so at that point, they would go to a Lutheran church. I was actually baptized as a baby in a Lutheran church. But I did get baptized later, so no need to fear. I'm not trusting my baby baptism. But the Lord directed them to come here. So my parents had been members of this church for 37 years. They came on Easter when my mom was pregnant with my brother. So yeah, so it's been about 37 years. And so we've been here ever since. But I can't say it was like, I remember growing up and looking at other friends in the church that I had and thinking they've got the perfect family because their dad worked a job and their mom stayed home and did the cooking and cleaning and was just this perfect housewife. And, you know, just dinner, in my mind, in a teenage girl's mind, you think everybody else has got it perfect. But that wasn't the case in our household. My dad has a degenerative eye disease, and I was going to cry when I'm doing this, because it's very close to my heart, because it's genetic, and I'm a carrier of it, and I think we believe at least one of my sons have it. So seeing the struggles that my dad has gone through over the years, and my mom having to work because they didn't know how long my dad's eyesight was going to allow him to work. It was always just a struggle, and I know it was a struggle for my parents because my mom always, she wanted to be that one to stay home. And Mother's Day was always very hard because, you know, you hear preaching on, being the good wife and mother and staying home and taking care of your family, and she wanted to. But, that wasn't what the Lord was allowing in their lives. And looking back, and we've tried to tell my parents so many times that we're so thankful that they did what they had to do. And I've seen such a work ethic in my parents just that I'm so thankful for. So growing up that way, I didn't have, the preacher's home that you think is typical, or the perfect Christian family home. And my parents were just very good. I don't have any complaints about my parents. They're wonderful, and I'm thankful for the way they have they have brought us up. We were brought up so good, and then I just ended up staying home. I didn't really think about going away to college or anything because I'm just a homebody. I don't like change. It's really hard for me. So I stayed here and got a job and worked. And at the same time, my husband, Sarah, who's in the office, is my husband's sister. And in 97, she met a man in our church here, and they got married. So I would see my husband come around. My husband's dad is a pastor up about 3 hours up north. And so they would come and visit. And so, of course, we noticed each other here and there. But when you're in high school, I was a year older than him in high school. And, you know, things were a little bit different. But, you know, you see each other here and there. So after he graduated from high school, I had been out of school for a year. And he had graduated, and he went on a missions trip to Mexico for 6 weeks and worked with Brother Raymond Jones down there. And the Lord had called him to preach during that time. So he came back from that, and during that time while he was in Mexico, there was a man in our church, Dan Snow, who many of you probably know, who was doing flooring, and he had said, "I need a helper. He called my father on and said, "Would your son be interested in coming down and, you know, and being my full-time helper?" So he felt like, okay, well, maybe that's the Lord directing him down here, and he can go to the institute here. So he moved here, and we got married between his second and third year of Bible Institute here. So we got married in 2000, and we've been married almost 18 years now, and the Lord has just done some amazing things during that time. In 2004, we were pregnant with our first one. It was my third pregnancy at the time, but this was the first one that I had Marissa, and she's our oldest there. We went on a cruise before. We're like, the last hurrah for you. You never go any place ever again because when you have kids. And when we came back, my parents were like, "Pastor Sal wants to talk to you guys. He had asked where you guys were on Sunday, so he wanted to talk to you guys." We're like, "What does he want to talk to us about?" And at that time, we had been teaching the junior high Sunday school class for a couple of years and gone to camp with the teens and stuff. But yeah, so we were like all nervous. What did we do, you know? And so he pulls us in and he says, "You know, I would like to bring you guys, you know, on staff as a full-time youth pastor." And the youth pastor who was here, who was my youth pastor, he was going to be moving into some other stuff. So we were like, "Yeah." And then he's like, "Okay, but just don't tell anybody for a few months." So we had to keep this thing a secret for her. That was February. I don't think anybody found out until like May or something like that. I couldn't even tell my parents. And the greatest thing, though, we're all kind of homebodies, my family. Everybody's here. If you see, there's a girl who's pregnant and already has 6 kids. That's my sister. She's got a surprise, number 7 this year. So that's my sister. I have a brother who's got a whole bunch of little girls and then just had a little boy a couple years ago. But so we're all here. So we're all just like homebodies. And so I remember being able to tell my parents that, you know, knowing he was called to preach. My husband knew he was called to preach, but he just didn't know where. And we sat with the Normans. A lot of you may support the Normans to England. And they were here on deputation, and one time they had stopped back through, and we went out to dinner. We're like, "Okay, give us some advice. What should we do?" He had just graduated from the Bible Institute. What should we do? And he's just like, "Stay busy where you're at." Okay, you know, isn't there like some magical way to find out where the Lord's going to put you? And no, just stay busy where we're at. And so that's what we decided to do. That was probably 3 years then, before the Lord brought us on here. But I remember being able to tell my parents, we sat him down, and my husband's like, "All right, well, I've taken the position of a youth pastor at a church." And they're like, "Okay, where?" And he goes, "Here." "Here where?" "Here." He's like, "Here." Yeah, obviously, at that point, everybody knew that there was still someone else here, so just kind of working out. So they were very relieved to know that we were still here. But it's been quite a ride. I was thinking about the survey that was done, and your expectations of being in the ministry I always thought I would check the, it was everything I expected, but not without some surprises. Because, and I blame the surprises on Mrs. Sowell, really I do. Because she, I've always said this, she has made being in the ministry look like it's a piece of cake. And because, and everybody knows this around here, you'll just see Mrs. Sowell smiling. And that's what, and that's why I always thought she just always did. I grew up with her daughter, Julie, and I just, we were in the same class. We did everything together. And, oh, there she is, and she walks in as I say it. So we did everything together. So, I mean, I guess I got to see, like, the other side of more than just, oh, she's the pastor's wife. She was my friend's mom, too, at the same time. So I got, but, and she was the same there as she was at church. So there wasn't any, like, oh, you should see what she's like at home. And she just puts on the face at church. That is not the case. She always made it look so easy. So in high school, I was actually going to talk about this when she mentioned something about me asking her about that. Our senior year of high school, we had to do a vocation project. And I remember thinking, it was between my 10th and 11th grade year during that summertime at camp, that the Lord impressed upon me to marry somebody who was in the ministry. I really didn't know what, and I struggled for a long time. I was like, can the Lord call you to be a pastor's wife or a preacher's wife? Or I wasn't really sure. So I remember I was like, that's all I got to go on. I didn't really have any desire to do anything else. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do my project on this. And thankfully the Christian school pastor, Steve Hobbins, he's actually here. We've got a great Christian school just across town. And, so they're supportive of doing anything like that. I couldn't imagine doing that in a public school, doing a vocation project on being a preacher's wife. But she always just has made it look so easy, and I'm thankful for that. I think if some of the things, if I would have known ahead of time, you know, maybe I would have been like, can you want to do something else, honey? You know, we can. You're a great floor layer. Let's just keep that going. But. You know, the Lord is just, I've seen the Lord do so many things over the last 14 years of being on staff here that I just, it amazes me to look back and see all that he's done. And 2 years ago, Preacher had moved us into the college and career group from being the youth pastor for 12 years, for the last 2 years has been doing that. And we've seen the Lord do some pretty amazing things in that group. It went from, but the week before that Sunday we were in there, there were 8 people come into the class. Next week, we leave on Tuesday, we go down to the Carolinas for a retreat that we're bringing 25. And so we're just really encouraged how the Lord's just worked in there, and we're excited to see what the Lord does with them, and we're just thankful that we're allowed to be here. This is basically a dream to be able to stay here and minister to the people that I've grown up with, that that we've just grown to love over the years. So I'm very thankful for that. And but I go back to thinking about my parents and thinking it was their hard work and just their desire to just, they love the church. And you know, I think kind of like Justine said, she didn't hear her parents talk about you know, negative things about being in the ministry. And my parents never talked negative about any, you know, now knowing older, you know, some of the things that maybe has gone on, everything's happened in churches all over the country, but knowing things that maybe has happened when I was younger in the church, I had no idea about any of that because my parents just didn't talk about anything like that. And I'm thankful for that. And they just instilled a love for the church in me that has grown to love to just want to work with the people and for the people of our church. So I'm thankful for that. So that's it.
Thank you, Susan and Justine. I think she probably went straight back there to work with the team, the kids. So that was a blessing, and I'm thankful I was able to pull off that mirage of everything being perfect. Of course, we know that's not true, but we do try. Okay, well, I'm the other side of the story, and I'm going to kind of bring the survey in to what, because this was the whole purpose of it. One of my other reasons for wanting our two associate pastors' wives to speak was that they kind of represented the different positions of what kind of home you were raised in. Justine being raised in a pastor's home, Susan being raised in a Christian home with good Christian parents, but not a pastor's home. And then myself, I was raised in a lost home, but churched home, good Catholic parents. Now, I'll show you in the survey, and, you know, it was kind of what I expected it would be, kind of across the board. There were seven of you that were raised in a pastor's home, 11 of you were raised in Christian homes, 5 of you were in lost but churched homes, 5 in lost unchurched homes. Did I say the first one? The first one was churched homes, 5 in lost unchurched homes, and then 1 put in saved unchurched home. And I've run into quite a few of those where the individual was saved, but the family did not go to church. So one of those. So it was kind of across the board there. And then as at what age were you saved? 11 under 10, 11, 10 to 18, 7 of you over 18 years of age. And I only took into account, I'm sorry, teens, if you're a teen here or if you're a lay worker here, I only took into account the pastor's assistant wives and missionary wives and evangelist wives in this survey, even though all of you filled out a form. And so I was that other side of the coin, that raised lost, but in a churched home. And I was raised in a good Roman Catholic family. My parents went to church all the time. We went to confession. We had our first communion, everything. And I remember there being a desire even then at that time. I loved the Lord. I wanted to do right. That's what I was taught to do. I just didn't know that Jesus Christ could save me once and for all. I thought I had to live it. I thought there was that scale in heaven where the bad works are one on one. And I wanted to make sure I did enough good works. And that is how I was living my life, trying to be a good little girl and do everything I was supposed to do. Well, at the age of, I would say, about 14 or 15, I don't know the exact age because, you know, I didn't know you were supposed to write down when you got saved, the date. As a Catholic, I didn't know that's what you were supposed to do. And my sister did not do it. But my sister had gone away. She was 6 years my elder, and she had gone away to another city to work after she graduated from high school. And someone she worked with witnessed to her. And they did not lead her to the Lord, actually. They did not draw in the net. They just witnessed to her, made her realize that there was something different out there. Of course, as a Catholic, you're always raised that it is the one true church. And if you leave the Catholic Church, you are going straight to hell. That, I mean, we really felt like, I felt sorry for all my friends. Actually, I didn't have a lot of non-Catholic friends. But the ones that I had, I felt sorry for them. So I thought, that is so sad that you aren't raised in the one true church. Because I truly believed everything. There's brainwashing that goes on when you're a Roman Catholic. You truly do believe everything you're taught. At least I did. And so when my sister came home after having gotten saved, oh, I didn't tell you, she went to a Jack Van Epi crusade, who at that time was a tremendous preacher and having big crusades. And she went forward and she got saved at that time. And then she started to witness to me. And she did it on the sly, in secret. She couldn't do it in front of my parents because they would have put a nix on that immediately. And so she started witnessing to me and telling me things. Well, I got saved pretty easily because she just told me what the... And of course, I always believed everything my sister said. I just believed it. I don't always now. There came an age where I rebelled against everything she said. That was about, you know, a little bit older. I rebelled against everything she said. But at that time, I believed everything she said. And so when she told me I needed to be saved and told me what the Bible said about salvation and told me All I had to do was ask the Lord to save me and that I was a sinner. Of course, I already knew I was a sinner. I went to confession all the time, confessing those sins, counting up those times I disobeyed my parents and the times I lied. And so I knew I was a sinner. It was very easy for me to get saved. Was it easy for me to leave the Catholic Church? No, that was difficult. Because, as I said, you're so brainwashed into believing it's the one true church. And so when she started talking to me about that she had left the church, I thought, oh, my. It just scared me for her. I thought, you can't leave the church. Salvation's one thing, but you can't leave the church. And I remember when she said, well, because I told her, I'll never hurt my parents like you hurt my parents. I'll never do that because I saw the pain in them when they found out she had left the church. And she said, well, Cindy, you got to figure out, are you going to please our parents or are you going to please God? Oh, that was just like a stab to my heart because, of course, my parents had taught me to please God. They were the ones that taught me that God was the most important thing. And so when she said that, it was very easy for me, not easy, no, not easy, easy to get saved, not easy to leave the Catholic Church. But I realized then, yes, pleasing God was more important even than what I was going to have to see, seeing the pain in my parents for us to leave the Catholic Church. So as long as I was in high school, I got saved when I was about 15 years old. As long as I was in high school, I really could not go anywhere else to church. My sister gave me a Bible to read. I didn't keep it hidden. I should have, but it disappeared. My parents confiscated that. They didn't take it from me, from my hands. It just disappeared. It wasn't there anymore. But then I would read the Catholic Bible because we had one of those big old, you know, big Bibles that they had that you put all the records in. And so I would read that. And sure enough, even through the Catholic Bible, I realized that by grace are you saved through faith and not of yourselves. That Catholic Bible even taught me that what my sister was telling me and what she was teaching me on the sly was the truth. When I graduated from high school, I went away to college. And of course, there if my sister had looked at me, she would not have thought, oh yeah, she's saved. I didn't appear any different than I ever did because I had no opportunity to grow. If you're just not able to go to church, you're not able to go to hear preaching, you really don't grow. So it wasn't until I went to college that Campus Crusade came knocking on the door. And they started talking to me about the four spiritual laws, and some of you are familiar with it. They understand it's just basically the plan of salvation. And I said, oh yeah, I did that. I did that. Yep, I know I'm going to heaven. Even though I didn't appear to be saved, maybe from the outside, I knew I was. I knew I had done that. I knew I was going to heaven. And so I got involved a little bit in Campus Crusade. And truly, they were a blessing because they led me along at a time when, well, who else would have discipled me? And so I learned a little bit there, and I started going to a non-denominational church that they suggested. I got baptized when I was in college. If any of you think you have to be baptized in a Baptist church, okay, I'm sorry. I was not. I was not. But I did know that you had to be saved to be baptized. And I was baptized by immersion, but it wasn't in a Baptist church. It was, I don't even know what kind of church it was. It was by someone involved with Campus Crusade because I realized, oh, I'm saved? I've never been baptized. They're telling me now you're supposed to be baptized if you're saved. Yes, I'll do that. And so I was baptized when I was in college there. And then I'm going to kind of leave it off there and go on with the survey. And at the end, I'll kind of tell you a little bit about how I met my husband. Okay, so we're going to go on to the fourth question of the survey. And that was, would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert? I don't know if this is interesting to any of you. I just thought maybe it would be, because what we wanted to show you through the survey and through the answers to the survey is that God can choose anyone to be a pastor's wife. He doesn't have a cookie cutter and a mold that he says, oh, this is what you have to be a pastor's wife. You'll do. Oh, this one will work. No, you don't have enough skills. Sorry. You're going to have to be set aside. That's not the way God works. And so we found that about 15 of you were introverts, 10 extroverts. Some of you kind of marked a line in between and said, I don't know what I am. Don't you, as pastor's wives, learn to talk to people? I don't care if maybe you consider yourself deep down an introvert. You learn to talk to people. And then on the other side, if you're an extrovert and you talk all the time, you probably rein it in a little bit, just as Kathy said. You got to rein in it a little bit, maybe talk a little bit less, trying to be the gracious woman that you should be. So introvert, extrovert, God uses you both. And then do you play the piano proficiently? For those of you who are like me that do not, only 8 of you said you did. The rest of us, 21 of us, no, we don't play it proficiently. Are you a church pianist? 7 of those 8 evidently are. The rest of us, no. Do you sing in the church choir? And you know what? You can sing in the church choir. Maybe you can't even sing and you still sing in it. So I'm not sure that that really tells you a lot. But 12 of you sing in the church choir and 17 of you said you don't. Maybe you don't even have a choir. So, and then the next question, are you a soloist quality singer? 7 of you are. Most of us aren't. I'm in the no category. Are you a church secretary? 13 said yes. 15 said no. So that's about half of you said that you are a church secretary. Other half aren't. And do you have secretarial skills? Most of you said you did. Some of you said you didn't. Okay, I'm going to tell you, I am a church secretary, but under the secretarial skills, that's nominal. I don't have that many secretarial skills. With the age of the computer and everything you can do, I can do what they show me to do on the computer. If they say, okay, hit this button and then do this and then do this and then do this. And if it all works out, yay, I have learned that step. Something goes crazy on it, I start asking the tech guys, okay, I don't know. Somebody messed this up. I don't know how to do this. Figure it out for me. So that's where I am in my secretarial skills. Not great, but yeah, I can answer the phone. I know how to do that. All right, next question. Do you or have you taught a children's Sunday school class? 100% of you said yes, you do teach or have taught a children's Sunday school class. Have you taught an adult Bible study or a class? Most of you said you have. Some of you said you hadn't. That could just be opportunity or not. Next question. If asked to speak in another church, would you? And then there were the different answers. Politely decline. I want to tell you that not one of you said you'd decline. And that's a blessing that none of you, because you know what? When somebody asked you, I've always considered, okay, that's God asking. I'll do it. But 9 of you said you'd accept with reservations. That probably would be me, particularly in the beginning when asked by another church. That was hard because I would just sweat bullets up until the time I did it. 9 of you said you'd accept with excitement at the prospect. And sometimes I feel that. It's kind of a lot of emotions. And then 9 of you said you'd accept, but you'd freak out. And I probably have fit in all of those categories at some point. Next question. Have you done counseling with ladies at your church? For the greatest majority of you said some. And that's where I'd put myself, some counseling. A few done frequently, some seldom and never, but the overwhelming majority said that you counseled some. Do you feel adequate to biblically counsel ladies? Now, I think that's a loaded question because there's one part that says, do you know the Bible? Yes, maybe you do, and yes, you have the right answers are in the Bible. There's a whole nother part of that of there's weird things out there that people are involved in, and just it's hard to biblically counsel. I mean, okay, I shouldn't say biblically counsel. It's hard to counsel. It's hard to counsel, period, some of the weirdness that's going on out there and trying to give them an answer that's going to straighten up their situation. You know what the right thing for them is to do, but sometimes the situations that you have coming at you are so strange that you hardly know how to give them a right answer. So most of you said, though, that you felt like you could biblically counsel ladies. Okay, then the next question, when you married your husband, five of you said that you were not a Christian at the time. Five of you said you were a Christian, but you had no idea you would be a pastor or a missionary's wife in the future. 17 said that you were aware of your husband's calling and were preparing for it. So the greater majority, yeah, you knew your husband's calling and were preparing for it. And then two of you were married a pastor or missionary that were already in that position. The last question, being the pastor, being the wife of a pastor or missionary has been, four of you said it was everything that you expected it to be. Four said that it was not at all what you expected it to be. 15 said you said thought it was similar to what you thought it would be, but not without some surprises. And six of you had no expectations. And that's where I would put myself in that category of having no expectations. Because remember, I was raised a Catholic, and priests do not have wives. And so I had no former pastor's wife to look at to say, oh, this is what a pastor's wife is supposed to be. And so as far as when you were married, your husband was, well, yes, I did know he was a preacher, and I guess I thought he could possibly be a pastor, but it just never really entered my realm that, oh, if he was a pastor, then I would be a pastor's wife. I just really didn't think about it. I married him when he came out of Bible college. My sister had gone to the same Bible college. The sister that led me to the Lord had gone to the same Bible college that he did. And so there was a point when I was going to my public college that I felt like it was about after a year and a half, I felt like, I don't belong here. I don't fit in here. Campus Crusade was okay, but I wasn't even exactly like them because I was like handing them books like Monarch of the Books, trying to tell them they should only be using the King James Bible. Can you imagine Campus Crusade for Christ, and you're trying to tell them you should only use the King James Bible? They probably thought I was really weird. And so I didn't really fit in. I remember going to a Bible study with Campus Crusade, and they had all these different Bibles, and they were saying, well, what does your Bible say? Well, what does your Bible say? And I'm thinking, well, this is weird. There's only one Bible. And this is just confusion. If you've ever been in a Bible study like that, where they're using various versions, you will automatically, at least in my mind, I feel it, you'd automatically realize there has to be only one. Because all it is a bunch of confusion. There's no answers to it. Each one gives its different take. And so I knew then, I don't really even fit in Campus Crusade because I know this is a mess. And so I felt like I don't really belong in college. I don't know where I'll go. I need to leave here, but I really can't go back and live at home because I know what they will expect of me in my parents' home, being Roman Catholic. And so I thought, I'll go live with my sister. I don't know what else to do. So she was excited at the prospect. So I moved down to Pensacola, Florida, lived with her, met my husband through her. I had met him maybe a year prior to that, but just met him. Didn't really, you know, I remember thinking he was a nice guy, but I was going with another boy at the time, so I didn't really think about it. But I moved down there to live with my sister. I was there from, let's see, I moved down there right after Christmas, like January. By May, we were married. So a lot of you talk about getting married pretty quickly. If you know what you want and you see what you want, and why wait? And so we both felt like we wanted to serve the Lord. I knew that. Even when I was in college, in the public college, I remember listening to Roll Off songs and just, you know, they weren't the best singers. Okay, they could sing, but they weren't high quality singers. But I loved it because I was just feasting on that the Word of God and that singing and that I'd never heard. I'd heard Catholic hymns, but they're totally different than Christian songs. And so when I moved down to Florida, I was just excited. I thought, this is going to be a perfect place because these are Christians. I've never really lived around all Christians. Well, it wasn't a perfect place. Okay, I'm not even going to go into all that. But it wasn't a perfect place, but it was for me. Because I could grow and be in church and hear the Word of God preached. And my husband and I got married, as I said, in May, after having been there 5 months. We got married. He had just graduated from Bible school at that time. We left the following August. We were headed out to Idaho to work with the Mormons. Just felt like that's what the Lord wanted us to do. You know, I don't know. So we were headed there, but we were going to stop in Ohio and visit my parents and my family first. So we stopped and visited my parents. Well, you know, the $200 we had in our pocket ran out really quick. And we were not going to make it out to Idaho. And so my husband's father told them, well, get a job. You're just going to have to, you know, stay there, get a job and work. And so that's what we did. We didn't live with my parents. We moved to Dayton, which was about 50 miles from there, where my husband actually had grown up. And he got a job at Kroger's. And there we visit different churches in the area. Well, some people found out he was a preacher, had gone to Bible school. So we interned in one church and various places. Well, eventually we wound up coming up here to be with three families that had wanted to start a church here in the Toledo area. And the church that we were going to, Greg Easteps in Dayton at that time, advised us this would be a good place to go. So we came here. He became the pastor of those three families, Hope Baptist Church, meeting in a house. And eventually, several buildings later, and I'm not going to go through all that, we wound up here. But let me tell you my experience. I, up to this time, had been very little amount of time in a church that taught the Bible. And so did I know my Bible? No, I did not know my Bible. So as a pastor's wife, I really grew with our people. And I Carol mentioned being put into a large church and feeling like that was a blessing because there were lots of workers already there and she kind of learned from them. I think I would have been swallowed up, Carol, if that would have been the situation. Instead, God gave us this little group of three families, believe it or not, all of them, which had been former Roman Catholic. So I understood. They were where I was at. I understood them. And I could grow along with them. And so I really learned my Bible and learned everything through being a pastor's wife. I don't advise this. It's not a good way to do it. Learn it before. But this was my experience. This is how it was for me. And I remember the first time we had ladies' visitation. I've never been on visitation myself. How am I supposed to teach other ladies to go on visitation? And my husband said, play the man. He said, just do it act like you know what you're doing. So that's what I did. Didn't know what I was doing. I had my little plan of salvation marked in my Bible. I remember the first time I ran into somebody that actually said, yes, show me, you know, you ask them that question and then you say, could I show you in the Bible? How? I thought, really? Oh no, what am I going to do? And so I, yes, moved through it. They didn't get saved. How could they? I made a mess of it. But, you know, God will use anybody. And that really is what this survey was all about. It was not about making you feel alone. You're not alone. There are so many people, so many pastors' wives, so many missionary wives, so many preachers' wives like you. They fit in your category. All God wants is a willing heart. That is all he wants. And I remember saying when I was in college, the public college, I remember saying, Lord, I want to serve you. I could never fit into a career field because I thought, I don't know what I want to do. It's like God would never let me be satisfied saying, oh, I want to be a secretary, or oh, I want to be a computer. My family, that's what I was in when I was in college, believe it or not, as little skills as I have now on the computer. When I was in college, that was my major, to be a computer expert. And that was when computers were about as big as this wall. So, totally different day and age. But God would never let me be satisfied with anything like that. It all seemed useless to me. It just seemed worthless. I thought, we all just die in the end of all this. This is worthless. What I want to do is serve you. And God has miraculously allowed me to do that. And he's answered my prayer to allow me to do that. Have I always done it to the best of my ability? I'm ashamed to say, no, I haven't. But he's allowed me to be able to be in a position where I could serve him. And I'm so thankful for that. And I don't have anything bad to say about being a preacher's wife. It's all been good. Even the valleys have been good because they've taught me things. So thank you for your attention. I don't even know what time it is, but let's take a break.